Blog Talk Radio.
One night, Farmer Brown was taking the air, locked up the barn with the greatest of care. Something stirred when he hollered, "Who's there?" This is what he heard: "There ain't nobody here but us chickens. Ain't nobody here at all. So quiet yourself, stop all that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us. And kindly point that gun the other way and hobble, hobble, hobble up and hit the hay, 'cause there ain't nobody here but us chickens. Ain't nobody here at all. Shaking the ground, kicking up an awful dust. We chickens trying to sleep and you butt in. And hobble, 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 hobble with your chin, 'cause tomorrow is a busy day. We got things to do, we got eggs to lay, ground to dig and worms to scratch. Thanks a lot of setting, getting chicks to hatch, 'cause there ain't nobody here but us chickens, done. Stop on that bus. There ain't nobody here but us. They gotta point that gun the other way. How am I?
You're listening to Nonprofit Radio, FM 97.3, KZAC LP Sacramento, 104.9 FM, KGIG LP Modesto Ripon, RFM 93.3, KPHD LP Modesto Series.
Welcome to today's edition of The Backstory with former Mayor Carmen Sabatino, with news and information you will not read in the local paper or hear on area radio and TV. The Backstory presents an insider's view of what's really happening on a local political scene. And now, let's join your host, Carmen Sabatino, to learn The Backstory.
Well, once again, good morning, and there are a few things that we do want to talk to you about this morning. Dave, the article in the paper on Thursday, that'll be the 7th,
yeah.
And the article says that video proves girl's claim of attempted kidnapping not true. Well, 6 days later, we have another article written by two people that are looking pretty silly, in my mind, and that would be Birgit Flatiger and Police Chief Galen Carroll. They were actually fooled by a teenage girl who made up a story about I don't have to keep repeating his name because that only adds to the damage that's been done to him by a false accusation of a teenage girl. The interesting thing is the word false. She tricked him. She tricked the district attorney. She tricked the police because she was able to make this false accusation, and they went with it because they're incompetent.
Yeah, they didn't do the due diligence of looking for security cameras.
No. Well, more than that. More than that, they're incompetent on all kinds of levels. I visited the courtroom in the Carson trial for a little while this morning and reaffirmed the incompetence of a district attorney's office that after 4 years has been unable to present a credible case to a jury. Why is that important? Well, how about $10 million? And that's an old figure I've used. It's probably a lot more than that. But I digress. Today, and I'm sorry, on the 13th, Birgit Flatiger and Galen Carroll were allowed by the editors of the Beat, allowed to do this, walk back their incompetence. First of all, they said that it was a viewpoint article. You remember that? Those are articles that are allowed for friends and forbidden to enemies, apparently, of the Modesto Bee. And Flatiger and Galen Carroll wrote this piece, and its false accusations hurt those accused and victims of actual crimes. Yeah, this teenage girl was hurtful. She did the wrong thing. She filed a false accusation. She's a minor female. Her name is never going to be or shouldn't be disclosed. But who do Flatiger and Carroll, who do they blame? They don't blame themselves. You know, they should admit it. The backstory is 14-year-old girl files false accusation, and district attorney and police fall for it because they didn't do their due diligence, as you say, Dave. So what Flatiger and Carroll said in this article on the 13th, that it was her fault. It was the kid's fault. Well, you know, if MPD did an investigation and decided that this case was worthy of going to the district attorney, and this district attorney thought that this case was worthy of charging this man, and then the district attorney says, well, it wasn't our fault. It was that little girl's fault. Because she tricked us. She got us to believe. Got us to believe that this man was guilty. Well, here's the paragraph I sort of liked. It is our hope, that would be Flatiger and Galen Carroll, it is our hope this young girl will soon appreciate the wrongfulness of her conduct. It is also our hope that this innocent man will not be judged by the false accusations made against him, and that future victims will not be judged based on the actions of this one young girl. Let me tell you, when you get your name in a front page of a newspaper, there's no taking it back.
None.
It's there. You're falsely accused, and they print it on the front page or even on the back page sometimes. The damage is done. But who continues to stay on the job? Well, hey, it's our fault. Birgit Flatiger won by 61%. She got 61% of the vote. And maybe it's I know in this case, in this election, we're attempting to write a story of how the Bee, Mike Dunbar in particular, the opinion editor of Bee, assisted in electing Flatiger to office. And that was a stroke of genius for Dunbar. First, you condemn her, Flatiger, and endorse the two other candidates for district attorney. That would have been Kaczynski and, what was his name? Frank Matty?
No. Mattis.
Mattis. No? Whatever.
Sorry.
Whatever. Sorry, Frank, you lost. But don't forget, you still have your job now
in
the district attorney's
there.
Office. If you were a real threat, she'd have fired you by now.
I was John Main, yeah.
That's right. Thank you, John Main. And then when it came time to elect somebody, the November election, Mr. Dunbar decided that, well, we're not going to endorse anybody. But they didn't have to say that. They didn't have to say, Dunbar didn't have to say, I'm not going to endorse anybody. Dunbar just ignored the election completely.
Was he the one that earlier had written, it's time for a breath of fresh air?
Sure.
Same person.
Yeah, same person. And Mr. Dunbar, I don't blame you. If I were to caution anyone in this town, is to be careful. You, Mr. Dunbar, you have every right to be afraid, like the rest of us. So anyhow, well, Tuesday night I went to a city council meeting to talk about my good friend Cecil Russell, who we're going to be talking a lot more about, because we're going to look to have him investigated. And this is the incident where he called me a liar and accused me of libel and said he had no respect for me. My reply to that has been and will be that if I'm lying, as Mr. Russell accused me of, then you have nothing to worry about. The council doesn't have anything to worry about. Of course, the council can be criticized for denial of free speech. And that's what happened to me at that meeting when I attempted to respond. But it was okay, because it's up to the discretion of the mayor to conduct the meeting. Well, so he was perfectly within his rights, apparently, to tell me, as he did, to get away from the mic, and that I didn't have a right to speak or reply. And one comment was, you've done enough. You've gone too far, was one of the comments we heard. And my reply to that is, I haven't gone far enough. So we'll leave that there and go to a much more important appearance by two young ladies who are volunteers out at the Beardbrook Park Village, where the homeless have gathered. But they're not going to be there long, because in a couple of weeks, according to Mayor Branville, we'll throw them under the bridge. So why don't we play the 10-minute tape of the two volunteers at the city council meeting Tuesday night.
You got it.
She's going to kind of just go like right after me. Good evening, council. My name is Yvonne Wilkie. I'm a volunteer down at Beardbrook Park. I've been down there at the park since the park came to be. And what I wanted to come talk to you about tonight is try to get maybe some sort of timeline on the move to Gateway. It's becoming a urgency right now, because the folks are out there in this rain and dealing with all these elements. Their belongings and their tents that they are living in are becoming destroyed quicker than we can keep up with them. And I think part of that is because they need to, you know, some kind of cover, some kind of protection. And I think if we don't get them moved soon, that they're going to start heading back into town looking for, you know, alternative shelter. Right now, because of the rain and and mud going into their tents, they're dealing with new issues, mold, and other health issues. Jerry's going to speak on a situation that came about today that was actually rather mortifying to me, that that this is even going on. And I know that you know that there are people down there with mental health issues, but there's got to be maybe some kind of way when the agencies could go out there and maybe talk to people and see what's going on and see what they're dealing with. And so situations like what Jerry's going to talk about aren't happening.
Yeah, today has been a very interesting day, and it was very interesting to have the gentleman praying, because my hope in coming to these council meetings is to make a change in this town, not to just talk about it, but walk the walk, not just talk the talk. And it was mortifying today to finally have somebody go out there and check on one of the ladies out there that has behavior health and mental health issues. We were out there Sunday, and we had to legitimately change her clothes right out there. She was wet from head to toe. She has the mentality of an 8-year-old. I had somebody from the city go out there and check on her today, and they can't do anything because of regulations, okay? These regulations are going to end up with somebody dead out there. This girl has the mentality of an 8-year-old, and people are feeding her meth in order to get money out of her pocket. So she's living in maggots. They undid her tent, you know, to try and get her a new tent. The whole entire bottom of her tent was filled with maggots. They found a dead cat in there. Like, it's becoming a problem with our mental health. I'm not out there. Like, I was talking to the chief last time, and the only thing he could come up with was there's drug addicts out there. Okay, well, I'm not worried about the drug addicts. I'm worried about the mental health people. I'm worried about our elderly. And I'm worried about the people that truly, truly wants to be helped. Because we have one that we're working with right now that has lived all of her life out on the streets. And now that we're giving her her dignity back, she's wanting to get a job. She's wanting to get into a house. She's wanting to change her life because we've helped her figure out that you're worth getting that. And it's interesting that you guys pray before these city council meetings, but are you guys praying to help the city? Or are you praying to help your guys' pocketbooks? Because you know what? I'm down there just by the grace of God that I'm helping these people, okay? The drug addicts, they can stay drug addicts, okay? They can do whatever they're going to do. But where do you draw the line at helping the mentally ill? Because I'm a mental health patient myself, but until it was brought to me, I didn't know I was a mental health patient. I just thought that's the way life was. Okay, I have behavioral health issues, but thank God for a doctor that loved me enough to take me from trying to jump off the hatch overpass to being able to work at Amazon, to have a life, because people loved me that way. And my mother that dealt with so much trauma from a child, that now I'm actually at working. I'm actually able to pay a bill. I'm actually able to have a car payment, to have insurance, to do the things that I should be doing and not be on drugs, not be doing things that I should not be doing. But it was because of the love of somebody showing me that I mattered. If we showed these people that they mattered just a little bit. I've only been working with one of the girls for about a month, and she's already like, okay, how do I get a job? Okay, if it only took me a month to help her figure out she's worth it, then how? Why can't we do this?
I think we've got a city manager might be able to help in regards to the timelines that we're attempting to meet.
So thank you for coming here and speaking. We are just putting the final touches on the move under the 9th Street Bridge. There's a couple of logistical things that we have to work out, but within the next week or so, you're going to start to see significant movement from Beard Brook over to the new site.
And what can we do about the mental health problems? Because that what I saw today just isn't, it's not okay. You know what I mean? Like, this lady legitimately, and they couldn't 5150 her.
Well, the city itself does not deal with behavioral health and mental health issues. The county does. And my understanding is they're constantly down there interacting with all of the different individuals who are down there. We try to provide the necessary social services that the individuals need. But sometimes it's an elected choice.
Okay, but how do we go about making laws change? How do we go about changing the laws in Modesto where these social workers can help? Because I'm in contact with these social workers constantly. And they have things that they have to do because of the law. How do we change the laws? How do we go about helping the laws? I mean, does the attorney, do you have any ideas for us where we can take this to help change the laws where, you know what I mean, you have somebody out there acting like an 8-year-old. on meth, being abused sexually, mentally, emotionally out there, and they can't even help her even though she's living in maggots? Like, where do we draw the line with our mental health patients? She ran away from a behavior health house facility because she was being abused there, and she's scared to death to go back there. So where do we draw the line? How do we do this? Because I just read your introduction for your election and said you were here to make changes. How do we make this change?
Excuse me. Councilmember, are you go ahead and speak?
I would like you to call me, and we can go talk to our congressman.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate, you know what? Thank you. Thank you so much.
Hold on. I've got somebody else. Councilmember Madrigal.
At the risk of stating the obvious, just wanted to ask if you had immediately reported what you've seen, and my only other answer, I mean, I know it's obvious.
I do. I have everybody's number in my phone.
The only other thing is just, I tell you the same thing I tell folks when they see something wrong, you know, the whole, if you see something, say something, we constantly have to report it, whether it's somebody illegally dumping trash in the neighborhood, whether it's somebody doing something wrong with somebody else, because there will be a response from our authorities. I have no doubt about it. And so I appreciate you putting this, you know, big spotlight on this issue. I think we hear you loud and clear, and I think, you know, also our law enforcement hears you loud and clear, and if you just continue following that up with the appropriate behavioral health, or, you know, county agencies, because I appreciate your enthusiasm and your desire to want to seek a solution by changing a law. But that's obviously not going to help in the immediate short term,
right?
Because in my experience, I could be wrong, but in my experience, typically, you know, these legal changes also need to be accompanied with funding, and that funding does come from the state, it goes to the county, and they deliver these type of mental health services that are needed for folks like that young lady that you're talking about. Anyway, thank you so much for continuing to...
It's just frustrating to me because I see the workers frustrated too. You know what I mean? Like, see them wanting to help, but they have all this paperwork. You know what I mean? That stops them from the help.
We get a lot of, I can't help you. I can't help you. We want to help them. I think the city has a lot of great long-term goals. I think we need to come up with some shorter... attainable goals right now that can make a difference.
Okay, we'll give you a call. Thank you.
Thank you.
And there you go.
You know, the backstory and all of this, of course, is we just briefly talked about the district attorney and the police chief, and yet at that same meeting, the police chief was there. I think he left before I spoke, but what we got from the mayor and the council is that it's not our job. You should go to the county. And yet, obviously, she was reporting violations of the law. Use of methamphetamine on a teenage girl to abuse her and give her the meth. Is there no one to enforce the law? Certainly not Birgit Flatiger, because she's wasting her time looking after her political enemies. You know, go get Carson. Go get anybody that I don't like. And yet, there are 58 unsolved murders in Stanislaus County. Why doesn't she get to work on that? There's a backlog of cases in our court system. Why doesn't she get to work on that? Who's responsible? And then you got Tony Madrigal, who gets up there and says, oh, yeah, well, you report what you see. Really? To who? What are they going to do about it? Where's the health department? You got human beings living in tents with maggots and a dead cat. You got this teenage girl being given methamphetamine so she can be abused, and that she's even abused at the mental health facility. Where are you, gentlemen? Where are the Board of Supervisors? you know, where's the leadership there? What's going on at the mental health center? We're gonna make sure. Well, you can't make sure of a whole lot of things, but hey, you know, I got a chance to watch our president. I'm not gonna try and call. Well, he is the president, you know, and he gave a speech this morning about declaring an emergency. And, you know, I got to thinking, it's been called an end run around Congress. You know, he sounded like a kid who had been given his allowance, but told that he couldn't spend it on drugs. He couldn't spend it on what he wanted to do. And here's Trump. Oh, I want to spend it on my wall. Well, the danger of that is that this is another step in Trump's desire to be king. He wants to be the authoritarian. He doesn't want Congress. He doesn't want the House of Representatives to tell him how to spend our money. He's the one who says, give me my allowance or I'm going to declare an emergency. Now, the danger of that, folks, the danger is that now any president, and the Democrats can do it if they should win in 2020, the next president can declare an emergency if he doesn't get what he wants.
That's like when they did the nuclear options for legislation. They were happy when they did it, and they were unhappy when the other party was in power.
Well, whether it's national or local, it's not a good situation. And I should smile more. It's hard to do, but I should. Well, we are going to be back Monday. And I will be talking more about the Chamber of Commerce and Cecil Russell and the Convention and Visitors Bureau. And we are going to be discussing public records requests that we are going to make. We are going to be asking Mr. Russell to provide some of the information we want. For example, is in 1999, who was on the Modesto City Council? In 1999, who was in charge of the Chamber of Commerce? And also, how much money did the city of Modesto subsidize? For how much did they subsidize the Chamber of Commerce? Besides what they took. So I have a problem with the chamber being on welfare. I mean, they're business people. They should get their money from their membership because it's their membership who directly benefits. Of course, the argument can be made that members of the Chamber of Commerce don't get very much for their dues, and that's a question I've heard from many businessmen. What am I going to get? What am I going to get? So I have a surprise announcement for Mr. Russell Monday at 11. Get your neighbors, get the number down, put it in your phone, 846-1814 at 11 o'clock. Up an awful dust.